that's a big thing that I always like to try to put together in the shows, is creating the sense of space where we're taking that audience somewhere, and sonically, what does that sound like? And I like having a lot of detail in, okay, this space, i.e. this portion of the episode is, like, if I go back to the American Kennel Club example, okay, this is Missouri in the 1850s in the summer. Okay, cool. I can work within that. There's a lot of information and detail there that I can pull out.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Joshua Sui.
I'm curious about something, and I'm not sure whether you work on advertising or not. Do you do any, like, commercials and stuff like that?
I'd love to. The one thing that I have noticed when it comes to branding and things like that, to that point, there's a lot more leverage on music. I don't really compose, so that's kind of where I get stuck. But the concept of audio branding, of creating sonic logos and stuff like that, is something I'm very interested in doing and would love to work with people on those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, sound is so important for all of these productions, whether it be a creative endeavor like a podcast or a drama or something like that,
right,
that's only audio, or if it's advertising, because
right,
advertising needs to hit us where we feel too.
Right. And that's a big part of it too with the branded podcasts in general, is like, a lot of times, of course, you're working with a marketing department, typically are handling those. I'm like, well, you guys already have your own visual components put in place. You have your packages, you know, if your text and color schemes, and if you're doing video stuff, here's all my lower thirds and graphics and all that kind of stuff. But have you really sit down to think about, what does your show sound like? And a lot of people don't. And that's a, I think, a missed opportunity that a lot of brands aren't paying attention to, is trying to figure out, what do we sound like, being is just as important as what do we look like? How are we coming across to an audience on an audio, an aural component versus just visual? And how can you leverage them as two independent entities, but the symbiotic relationship of how do they work together?
So true. Yeah. And very important for podcasts, because that is entirely audio. And I'm assuming that inside these branded podcasts, they also advertise their own stuff.
To some degree. I mean, largely, I think you can almost
Maybe
think of them as
just with commercials inside. Like,
sure.
I mean, you could just, like, little short things.
Right. But in all honesty, the majority of the shows that I work on, they're more like flagship shows for their brand. So the show itself is the commercial
in a sense.
So one of the other shows you were talking about with the pandemic stuff, it's a really, really cool show that we work on that's called On Tech and Vision with Dr. Cal Roberts. Now, unfortunately, Dr. Cal is now retired, and we're waiting to see. I'm hoping that we can run the show again, because it's so much fun. But essentially, we're working with the Lighthouse Guild out of New York. They're a nonprofit, and they focus on technology for visually impaired people. So there's a lot of just in that alone, when we were first getting into things, I'm like, I don't even know. I'm like, what are we talking about? Like white canes and things like that? Well, yeah, there's a smart white cane that you can connect to an app on your phone, and you can plot out a specific course from here to the store, let's say. And as you're walking down the street, it'll tell you, you know, where different stores are around you. Or if you have to get on a bus, it'll be able to tell you, what is the bus schedule? So you make sure you get on the right bus, and then be able to tell you, oh, this is your stop. Now you have to get off. If I'm walking around the store, there's another technology. And of course, the name I'm blanking on, but there's these specific colored coded QR codes that you scan with the app. And based on the information that they code in there, they're able to help somebody who is visually impaired figure out what's on the shelf, where things are at, and essentially guide you through a store based off of this technology.
So it's helpful.
Yeah. And it's not just, well, people just read Braille and stuff like that, which I was surprised to find out that not a lot of people who are blind or visually impaired have the ability to even read Braille. It's a very small percentage, which is interesting. So the concept being is, how is this technology helping people with visual impairment, but how can it also be brought into the mainstream to help us as well? If a similar idea of doing curb cuts in the sidewalk to help people cross the street, but now it's people with disabilities to be able to cross the street, but now that it lets other people just walk across the street very easily. So how can we fold in this type of technology into our own lives, and how can it benefit us just as much as it's helping other people who, if you will, specifically need it? So that's a really, really cool show, being able to have a tech focus. That's more of an interview show where the host would actually sit down with the creators of this technology. But we would also get supplemental interviews trying to get people who use the technology so we can get a real world experience and a real world conversation with somebody that has intimate knowledge of the technology because they use it all the time. So that, I think, really helps to humanize it and really make it where it's not just this is a poster child for a technology, but this is actually people using it and what they actually think about it. So when we were able to dive into those types of things, that's was a really interesting show to get off the ground.
Super fascinating.
Yeah.
But it begs the question, we're talking about audio here and specifically branded podcasts. So it kind of begs the question of how do you differentiate one podcast from another in the sound that you create for each branded podcast? Like, is it different music at the start? Do they say something different at the beginning every time? Is there some kind of unifying audio element in there that you can use to brand these podcasts so you can tell them apart?
Right. And you're exactly right. In parts, it's if we're doing what we would call an evergreen intro and outro, where there's a specific copy that we record and that book ends each episode to start and end. And then we pick a specific theme song, if you will, that starts and ends each of those. But that's not always the case. In particular, for the Lighthouse Guild show with OnTech, we had a track that they liked as an intro piece. But what I started to do was use that just under the main introduction of the topic of the episode with the host. Now, Dr. Cal's whole approach, he always loved this concept of a big idea in the beginning of the episode. And he's a smart guy because you have all of, 30 seconds to wrangle somebody's attention. So he's like, I want you guys to come out swinging on that intro and pull people in, which was so much fun because then obviously I get to throw a whole bunch of sound design and stuff at it to help pull people in. We did one episode where we were specifically talking about, and I'm trying to remember his name now, Tenzing Norgay. I know him. He was the Sherpa that when they crested and climbed Mount Everest for the first time in 1950. So I got to do like an old school radio personality voice and stuff like that on it. And, you know, the sound of the nature and things like that. So being able to pull everybody in on that. So it moved from just being this placeholder piece, if you will, of an intro to that getting moved back to pulling people in with some sort of high-end piece of content at the beginning. Now it's just kind of a motif almost that shows here's what we're talking about for this episode. Then the rest of the episode was me doing custom sound design and music and stuff for every part. So the only same thing that you would get would be the evergreen outro for the episode and that one piece of music. The rest of it was all custom for every single episode. Whereas other shows that are more your traditional conversation interview type shows typically have the same intro and outro music. And some of those don't even utilize any like interstitials or anything like that. So that's the main meat of the show in regards to the creative element is that intro and outro music. If I can add and sprinkle in some sound design and stuff like that, that makes sense. I'll do that. But typically, you know, we'll do that. I have another show where they record a lot at their conventions and I've played back and forth with it. But now, like, I'll clean everything out of the conversation and then build back in the ambience of the convention behind it. And that way I have the most control over how well the audio comes out in regards to the interview, which is the most important. But I'm like, I kind of like having the sound of the crowd background in there. So I'll make a custom background for those, either sampling parts of the interview itself that I get of people in the background and then throwing it into something like Sound Particles where I can build a wall of track out of it to lay in the background, or even just build it, try to find similar sounding crowd sound effects, build that in, and then use that as a underscore for the episode. So there's different areas we can go. But to the main points, if you're thinking about that sonic branding and the sonic identity, where do you want your brand to go? What sticks out to you? And music is a big part of that specifically. And in part, like I said, if it's just an intro and outro sound, if you're not running music through an entire episode, what does that represent for you? I worked on another show for Pegasystems, and sonically, part of their brand identity was like lo-fi, old school hip hop. I'm like, all right, sweet. That's stuff that I really enjoy working with. So all of the music that I would typically use for the majority of the episodes, unless I could find something specific on a tech basis that made it easier or better to lay in other types of music, for the most part, I was using lo-fi hip hop sounds for their stuff. I was doing my best not to reuse any of the songs, but all right, this is our brand identity. Can you use this? That's super easy for me to work with.
Hi, I'm Daniel Hook. I am a sound and interaction designer and researcher and also co-head of the sound design master program at Zurich University of the Arts in Switzerland. And you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast. This is a great place to learn about the power of sound. And if you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life, keep listening.
Yeah, it can be tricky when you're talking about the music for these, because when it comes to branding, I've had this discussion with multiple people that have been on this show. And one of the things that I've learned is that it's really, really good for the brand to own their own music.
Sure.
So if that's at all possible, and that might mean paying a musician to make a track for you that is specific to that podcast or to that brand. And it kind of has to be a mix of who the brand is and who they're trying to reach.
Right.
Because you don't want to alienate the people that you would want to listen to the podcast.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's got to be a good mix. But owning that music themselves also means that no one else can use it.
Right.
Because that's one of the big problems. And this happens in commercials all the time, or it used to. I think AI is kind of changing that a little bit, because the license-free music directories are kind of getting inundated with AI stuff as well. So it's and it's easy to change that on a really minute level,
right,
depending on what you're doing. But it used to be that if you used a piece of music from a license-free music directory, then your nearest competitor could use the same song.
Exactly. And we specifically
or something completely different.
Right. We specifically use with Podfly, we do licensing of music through UPM, the Universal Production Music Library. So I mean, I have probably at this point hundreds of thousands of songs that I can work through. And to that same point, if you're finding someone that's able to write the music and stuff for you and being able to, like, from that same thing, being able to produce stingers for you, 15-second, 30-second, 60-second, and 90-second spots that can be used for commercials and things. But also, if you're able to get your hands on like the stems or the multi-tracks for those. So if you have somebody like me, I can remix that for you. So I can make your entire podcast series with one song, but giving me the ability to remix that by adding and subtracting and moving things around, I can completely customize the music for that, again, with the exact same song, and being able to then blend that into like a sonic logo. So you can then see the possibilities. If you own the IP, how much more capability you have creatively if you actually own the content that you're working with.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I don't know that a lot of people give it the, you know, enough due.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's something that can really brand a podcast too, because obviously no one else can use that same music. And if you're using one piece, like you were saying, and then putting it into different parts, or taking out this instrument and using this part of it instead, or, you know, using the swell here instead of, you know, the intro here, you know, it just makes it part of a unified experience in sound.
Right.
And that's way more memorable, and it hits you in the heart a lot harder.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to get a little philosophical with you here, because I like asking this question.
Sure.
And I'm curious if you had a tip to give someone who was asking about working with sound, someone new, maybe someone who just started their journey, and they're looking for some ideas and advice, what kind of things would you tell them to pay attention to?
Sure. I think I would split it between the production end, or the client focus, and the engineer or the creative focus on that. if you're going into it as a brand or on a client perspective, the biggest thing is, I think, is to establish rapport with the agency or the people that you're working with, being able to trust them, but with the understanding that it's a symbiotic relationship between the two of you. One doesn't exist without the other in regards to the content approach. So if you're very clear with the things that you want and you don't want as a company, as a brand, as a client, that makes our life a lot easier. And of course, we have the ability to help you figure that out. That's not a problem. But the more that you can bring in regards to your overall vision, it's a lot easier for us to meet that. And to that point, allowing those engineers and things like that, the people you're working with, give them a bit more opportunity to experiment a bit more. I typically tend to do that if I get a new client, kind of throw the kitchen sink approach at it and then let them tell me what they like and don't like. And then as I kind of get through a couple of episodes, I kind of whittle things down to like what I know I can get away with and what they're actually going to like. An instance with that would be from my music mixing background versus podcasting, when it comes to like, where's the dialogue or quote unquote, the vocal track, I would typically try to mix the dialogue into the music and things like that, like I would a song, and nobody's like that. They want that to sit on top. So that was a major creative change for me, which wouldn't have come about had I not had a conversation with several brands in that regard. So to that point, so that's one piece of it, but that the technology side of it is very important. In particular, as we were talking about before, audio quality. Without that, that's the biggest detractor of your show, is if it doesn't sound good. It doesn't matter how good the content is. If it sounds terrible, nobody's going to listen to it. And
yeah, don't hear it their ears.
Right, exactly. And like I said, with us, with Podfly, we created this thing. It's basically a podcast in a box. If you're a client of ours, we're going to mail this to you. It's got your mic. It's got your headphones. You're going to get on a call with me. I'm going to help you get it set up. I'm going to give you a sound check, give you information about the show that you're going to be on, what to expect, and just essentially in a low impact and a sense, no pressure situation, get you set up for your show. So we don't have to do this. I mean, we can do it before the show starts. I prefer not to, because this also gives me more time in case we run into a technical issue, or maybe we have a broken cable or something. I can still get that to you, and we can still maintain your busy schedule and this time that you carved out for us to record, so we don't have to postpone or reschedule your episode. So the audio side of things, the recording, the audio quality, that is incredibly important. But overall, that I would still say, I'm trying to decide if it's equally as important or more, is just the content itself. Content is king. If it's captured well, you're well above most other people that are putting a podcast out. If it's good quality content and good quality audio, you're golden. And that's also a big thing, is really being able to figure out, what is your voice? What is the brand voice? What are you looking for in your show? What audience do you want to reach? And essentially creating a audience avatar of, this is, if it's Joshua Suey as your avatar, who is Josh Suey? What does he do? What is his job? Those metrics and things like that. So you can essentially gear your podcast and content to reach that specific person, because it's going to, in the long run, you're going to reach more of the right people that you're looking for if you know who that person is. And I think a lot of people tend not to look at that. And also,
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, don't get focused on this whole concept of monetizing your show. I had a lot of people that are like, I have 200 downloads. When can I start
now
making
you're
money?
Opening a can of worms,
right.
Aren't you?
I'm like, that's great, but you're not there yet. I mean, you might get lucky and somebody will be willing to throw some money at you, but I mean, I get it and I understand the concept and the point of wanting monetization, but at the same time, I want to say that it shouldn't, quote unquote, be about the money. It should be about your voice and putting out there the content that you want your audience to hear. If it leads to that, that's great. But if your sole and only motivation behind your podcast is to make money, chances are you're going to be disappointed, and chances are you're going to show is going to end up in the podcast graveyard with a lot of other people. It's a situation of commitment and consistency. If you're saying you want to put a show out every week, you got to put a show out every week. I would always tell my new clients, go broader every 2 weeks, every month. You can always do more, but it's much more difficult to put the brakes on and do less when your audience is already expecting it to be this. And
totally true.
I would also tell people on the brand side, And I guess I'm getting away from the whole sound audio component here.
But it's all part of it. Yes. It's podcasting. So right. I get it.
And,
yeah.
I'll come back. But to that same point, if you can, one, don't try to have some random arbitrary release date because you feel you need to do that, which I mean, I can understand you're trying to match it up with something. I mean, I get that. But I think the biggest thing, and it makes everybody's life a lot easier, is to batch record and produce as many episodes as you can before you do a release. That way, and I've seen it before with, I've worked on many a show with very large brands that we have a massive voice and we have a massive reach and a massive audience. That's a win. We should be totally fine. And the show flops again to these other things because they're not reaching the right people. And then we're at a point where, oh, we're cruising. We're pretty good. Now we're going to start cutting off the runway of extra time we have to produce episodes. Now our back's against the wall. And now we're creating an episode just to stay on deadline versus creating an episode of high quality content. And that's a huge problem because you're just devaluing your own brand because you just want to stay on a deadline. If I could have it my way with any of my shows, is I want to get all of the episodes done well before we even figure out a release date. Then that way, again, there's less pressure. We can find the right guests. We can shoot for, you know, those high caliber guests that might take several months to get them in because of schedule and things like that. So it gives you a lot more flexibility and freedom to really make the show that you need to make, not just making a show just to put it out there just so your audience has something to listen to.
Yeah.
And on the engineer side, if you're getting into this type of stuff, I would say I don't like people working for free. I was never a fan of that concept. Finding people that have some level of budget to pay you something is always good. But if you find a passion project, you find something you want to work on that might be low or no money just to get things going, totally do it. It's an opportunity for you to experiment, to try these things and figure out what is this all about and how does this work for me. And much like any audio engineer would be like for music, using reference tracks. So if I have an episode of a show that I really, really like, I want to sonically make it sound like this and really thinking about, well, what is the processing that they're using? Like what is the sound design component? Are they using lots of, you know, whooshes and impacts, or is this more diegetic type sound as you would think of in a film? Or maybe it's some of that, but maybe we have ambience in the background and things like that. Are we trying to make a space? That's a big thing that I always like to try to put together in the shows, is creating the sense of space where we're taking that audience somewhere, and sonically, what does that sound like? And I like having a lot of detail in, okay, this space, i.e. this portion of the episode is, like if I go back to the American Kennel Club example, okay, this is Missouri in the 1850s in the summer. Okay, cool. I can work within that. There's a lot of information and detail there that I can pull out. So when you're working with your projects, trying to get as much information as to, if it's a writer and producer that you're working with, you know, what do they want to get out of the show? What is the client wanting to get out of the show? Because there's nothing worse than spending all this time on really cool sound design and then the client's like, well, I don't want that. So the question is ensuring that you're meeting the objectives of the brand and trying to see where you can work inside of that space to be creative. But I think part of it is also to understand that it is not your show. So you have no right to be upset if somebody says, I don't like this, because it's not your show. I am essentially the vessel or the conduit of which the creativity comes through to make something that's actually be able to put out. But unless it's the show that I am writing and producing and creating on my own, at no point is this show ever mine. I'm a custodian of the show. So I realized that over time, as I approached it that way, it became easier to work with criticisms and things like that. And I'm like, I also have to understand that I'm working in quote unquote corporate America. So I want to make sure that the client is getting out of it what they want, and they're paying for it. They're paying me to make this. So they are the boss. They're telling me what they like and don't like. And in the end, my paycheck is completely dependent upon them being happy with not only the quality of the show, but the quality of me as a person working with them, working with their clients and the people that's going to be on their show. So there's a lot of soft skills that come into this too, that if you're not a people person, it's much more difficult, I think, to find a job with this type of thing because you have to be around people all the time. You have to work with people. You have to collaborate. You got to be able to have tough conversations and deal with a lot of ego and, in times, just tough people. It's unfortunately part of it. But what I really enjoy that our CEO for Podfly, Corey, would say is, if something happens, nobody dies. And that's an important thing. Sure.
So true. Yeah.
If a client's going to be upset, you don't want to upset a client. You don't want to drop a ball. It happens. But again, nobody dies. I'm not a doctor. So if something happens, my stakes are less in that regard. I don't think that's an excuse to slack off and poorly perform for your clients. Absolutely not. It's to understand you're human and things are going to happen. And doing your part to try to prevent that is a very important component. But in the end, again, you know, we're there to be creative people to help tell these stories through sound for these brands. And we're in a very unique position to be able to do that. So, I mean, I don't take my job lightly by any means. But at the same time, being able to be human with yourself if things happen, I think is a very important thing.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Give yourself some grace. And yeah, I feel a lot of that as a voice actor. I kind of am in the same situation in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally get that. You know, I do my best to deliver everything my client wants. But if something happens and they're not happy, then I am just going to do my best to fix the problem.
Yeah.
We're all human, mm-hmm. right?
And learning to fire clients is an important thing, too.
That is a good thing, too. Yeah. Yeah,
if there's not a fit,
your limits. And,
yeah, if it just doesn't feel right, if you dread seeing that person's email in your inbox, you shouldn't be working with them anymore.
Yeah, it's funny. I think a lot of my own business decisions, and probably yours too, have been based on my gut feeling.
Yeah, vibes. And I hate to say it, but vibes are a very important thing in this job. And I, like
totally
I said,
are.
I 100% know that I've gotten jobs because of my personality and who I am, in some regard, over my skill. Because I know there's other people out there that were probably fighting for the same position that had more skills, but I have the ability to talk to people. I like working with people and I like talking to people. So that gives me an edge because I'm personable. I can talk to people, and having to be client facing, that's a very important distinction and something that's very easy to set you apart from other people is being able to do things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Being easy to work with. I mean, that's the point of all this. It's not just the skills that
right.
you have, although that certainly helps.
Mm-hmm.
It's making it a pleasant experience
right.
for your end client.
Are
right?
you a good hang? That's what you should be asking yourself.
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
I think I learned that in part from like being in the music industry and working in studios and having to work with bands and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I made quite a few mistakes in forgetting that, hey, you're in a room full of microphones and people can be listening. So...
Yeah, that's something to be really careful of.
Is your mute button actually muted? Just
yes, definitely. Yeah.
So don't.
Those are some big mistakes.
Yeah. Don't talk smack around the client if you're like wait at least if you're gonna do it internally or just grumble when they're not actually on the call with them and it.
Yes.
You'll,
yeah. Yeah, that will save you many a time. Yeah.
Yep. Because I at one point when I was interning, we had a band in. They were in the control room. I was in the live room talking to the engineer and I was talking shit. I was and didn't realize that everything was still up and open. Nothing was muted. So that made the rest of the session very awkward because they're like, oh,
yeah,
so
that's awkward. Yeah. Though you don't want to do that.
No,
yeah.
You don't.
But, you know, there are mistakes that all of us make early on in our careers that make us cringe.
Mm-hmm.
And we never do that again.
Right. You learn more by your mistakes.
So embarrassing.
Exactly. You learn
exactly.
You learn far more, far quicker by making mistakes than you do doing things right. But I also, I hate our cultural interpretation of mistakes as always being bad. And in some cases, I like to celebrate the mistakes, because again, you learn a lot.
Experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's also the situation that I've had, especially when it's creative, that the mistake of one project could be the make or break of the next. So I guess in a way, don't quote unquote forget the mistakes that you made, because again, that particular approach that you did for that episode may not have worked, or maybe the sound design approach didn't work for this, but that could be exactly what is needed to help make the next episode or the next show go from good to great. So try to always file away those things, because I've pulled stuff up from the past and I'm like, well, let's try this. And then it turns out that it works. I'm like, all right, sweet. So there you go.
Yeah, you just never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on that note, how can people reach out to you?
Sure.
How can they get in touch?
Well, mainly just probably through my website, which is jssaudio.com, and that's S as in Sam. It's just my initials. And my email is josh@jssaudio.com. And I'm pretty, I frequent Instagram a lot, so that's also jssaudio. And I'm on LinkedIn as just Joshua Sui. And what else? I don't really use Twitter very much anymore.
Don't do that either.
I don't know if you've been on Threads recently, but that's another massive dumpster fire that I just
has it gotten that bad?
It might just be the algorithm thing that I'm on, because it's just all political stuff at this point. I'm like, just go away.
We've learned.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I will have all of these links in the show notes as well, so people will be able to reach out to you if they'd like to.
And I appreciate
really appreciate your time.
Of course. And Jody, thank you very much for having me on the show. It's funny because, like I said, I rarely am I on this side of the glass, and I really enjoy talking about this kind of stuff, especially if people want to listen to me nerd out about these things. So I appreciate you for having me on.
I'm here for the nerding out. That is what we do here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.